Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants or Jets, Yankees or Mets, Knicks or Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Listeners, it's that day of the week where we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Today is Monday, May 14th, 2018, and me and a Mad Mike would like to welcome you to this week's show. Listeners, the show airs on Mondays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and of course at LloydAThompson.com. So be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And also, listeners, we're on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. You can also send us questions that me and Mad Mike are answer on air to Lloyd@parkmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Great show for you guys today. We're going to talk NBA playoffs as we even got down to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals. We're going to touch up on that. We're also going to touch up on the Mets and the Yankees because we haven't touched up on baseball for a little bit. So we're going to tackle that on today's show. So listeners, as always, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports with Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Hey, man, I'm local. I'm in New York. Probably not making any moves this week. You know, it was Mother's Day weekend. Shout out to all the mothers out there. And, you know, just giving some time to the family.
Yeah, no doubt. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I hope you women had a great, wonderful, and joyful day. You got to relax and get pampered for a change. You know, so, Mike, there was some basketball being played. We haven't covered it much, but now we're at the Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. And the first game played yesterday was by the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I have to give kudos to the Cleveland Cavaliers because LeBron James has pretty much carried this team, you know, to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, I was talking to a couple of coworkers and I actually felt that Cleveland was going to beat Boston. And I still think they have a good chance of beating Boston. But, you know, the finals definitely didn't start off the way many expected it. The Celtics came out, you know, on fire, Mad Mike. You know, and the Cavaliers, you know, they were a bit sluggish. And I don't know if that was because they had some days off. You know, they moved through the early portions of the game. You know, the Cavs continuously failed to hit shots. Boston, you know, they had a great stifling defense. They played well defensively. They had a lot of energy. And eventually the Celtics' leg grew to an insurmountable level. And the Cavs couldn't catch up. The Cavs did make a push in the third quarter, Mad Mike, to cut the lead to 14 and maybe give themselves a chance. But that didn't last long. The Celtics started off the fourth quarter with another quick haymaker and put the Cavs down for good. And the Celtics scored a 108-83 win to take a 1-0 lead in the series, Mad Mike.
This just in, Lloyd. The Boston Celtics are not the Toronto Raptors, and Brad Stevens is not Dwayne Casey. And although Brad Stevens did not get one vote in the Coach of the Year voting from any of his peers, he's a better coach than Dwayne Casey. LeBron James is not in his head. LeBron James is not in the Celtics' head. And you're not going to see any mental breakdowns and no meltdowns from this Celtics team. I'm not shocked with what I saw yesterday. And I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that I think that the Philadelphia 76ers probably had the best or was riding the hottest, went in with the most momentum into the playoffs. And look at what Boston did to them. They just absolutely shut them down and made it a non-series, right? I don't think that – I wouldn't be shocked if you saw this, because I think that Philly was a better roster than Cleveland is right now, all-around roster. So, like you just said, LeBron has carried them, man. And if LeBron can't carry them, you're going to see more of this. And they do have the pieces. I know that Marcus Morris, that's which one it was, right? Marcus, not Marquise, it was Marcus. Oh, yeah, Marcus Morris gets a lot of criticism for his comment, saying that outside of Kawhi, he's one of the better defenders in the league against LeBron. Go look at the numbers. He wasn't lying to you. When he's on LeBron, LeBron shoots 39%. Now, we focus just on those words, right? But if you listen to the entire interview, he did say, now, there's not one man in this league that can stop LeBron James. Not one person. It's a collaborative effort, whole team effort. And that's what the Celtics embody, man. I'm telling you right now, I'm not shocked. A lot of first-round talent on that team. A lot of talent overall on that team. A lot of hard workers on that team and very well coached. Lost for words.
Yeah, not only that, man, Mike, let's also throw out there that they don't have Kyrie Irving, and they also don't have, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He hurt his knee.
Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, they don't have Gordon Hayward. So they
you're right.
They're without their two best players, and they pretty much stomped a mud hole in Cleveland in game one. But also, you know, here's the thing. You know, when you have LeBron James, man, Mike, and we both know, man, you know, anything is possible. And I'm not counting them out just yet. You know, so maybe Cleveland to turn this around is going to be tough if they lose game two in Boston. But even if they do lose game two in Boston, if they fall down three games, then okay. But if they're only down two games, I still think, you know, Cleveland still has a chance to come back. But you're right. You know, you can't diminish the talent that Boston has. You know, they still have Al Horford. And Al Horford was a huge part of why the Celtics were able to handle the Cavs so easily in game one. You know, he was just traditionally, he usually struggles against the Cavs, you know, but he had no issues in this game, man, Mike. You know, he dominated his way to 20 points. He had 4 rebounds and 6 assists, and his inside presence was felt, you know, the entire game. And, you know, I got to give kudos to Jaylen Brown, as he was just incredible. You know, the second-year wingman, he stepped up the entire playoffs, not just this game, but the entire playoffs, and has even been playing through a nagging hamstring injury. He was a nuisance on defense, you know, an endless source of energy on the offense, you know, that the Cavs have no answer for. He chipped in with 23 points himself and pulled down 8 rebounds. Now,
Is that the Jalen Smith that I said I would trade KP for as part of a package from Boston? That Jalen Smith?
Yeah. That,
okay.
Yeah.
That one.
Look, everybody knew that Jason Tatum, he had the potential to be a great player one day, but even his biggest supporters couldn't have expected this from him. You know, the playoffs haven't fazed him one bit. You know, he's not a deer, you know, stuck in headlights. You know, he delivered the dagger in game one, in my opinion. You know, but one player that talked a lot before the series, as you mentioned, was Marcus Morris, you know, and he declared that he was the best, you know, LeBron James defender in the NBA, like you said, outside of Kawhi, you know, and James only finished with 15 points on 16 shots. So maybe it's time to give Morris a little bit more credit. And
or maybe it was a little head games, right? Because I will tell you this, watching that game, LeBron did take a lot of uncharacteristic shots, a lot of forced fadeaways. Yeah, he's been hitting the fadeaway, but a lot of them forced. And maybe Morris's comments just got in his head just a little bit, where he felt like, he had to prove for everybody and to Marcus Morris himself, nobody can guard me. So maybe that was a little bit of sportsmanship, little head games, more than it was Marcus Morris believing what he was saying.
But not that, we're both athletes, man. Mike, why not believe in yourself?
No, I'm not debating. Man.
I'm just making a general statement because it was funny. I think last year I was talking to one of my baseball teammates, and something came up, and I told him that I was the best player on the team, and I felt that I was the best player in the league, and he looked at me like I was crazy. And I said to him, I was like, what do you expect me to say, that you're the best player or that that person is the best player? You got to have confidence in yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that translates to you playing well. And when you play well and perform well, you know, people can't say, well, this guy's talking out his butt. You know what I'm saying? So you're absolutely right. You know, it could be head games, and it's also a shot of confidence in himself as well. So kudos to him for having confidence in himself and being tasteful about what he said, Mad Mike. You know, so many players, they say these things, and they come off the wrong way. And look, the media is always looking for bulletin board stuff to throw out there. And even though what he said wasn't really bad, but look how the media turned it. You know, they're trying to turn it into something worse than what it really was, Mad Mike.
No, you're right. And they cut, you know, part of the interview out. So they could focus on the fact that he said that he thinks he's one of the best on the ball defenders outside of Kawhi when it comes to LeBron. He also said, everybody go listen to the entire interview so you can see how dirty the media plays to drum up this playoff beef. He did say there's no one person who can stop LeBron James. It is a collective effort throughout your entire roster. He did say that. He did agree with his coach who said it right before his interview. That's what the Celtics believe. No one on the Celtics, unlike the Raptors really think it's all about LeBron James, which is why they can never beat him, right? You know it, and I know it. We see the mental breakdowns. You heard Dwayne Casey talk about it, which is why he's fired, which hopefully we get to that after this. You know, Brad Stevens is not going to play the games. We're not going to play the mental games. We know who he is. We know he's the greatest of this era. We know that he's unstoppable. He's gone to 12 straight Eastern Conference Finals. He's gone to 7 straight Finals. Think about that for a second. They know who they're dealing with. Or he's been to 12 Eastern Conference Finals. They know who LeBron James is. They know what he's about. They're not about to trick themselves. And if you see the rest of the team yesterday, what did they do? Nothing. Why? Because Boston knows I can't stop LeBron. I can only make his life miserable. The other guys, I can stop and I will stop. That's what happened.
Yeah, and that's the key to Boston winning. So it seems like they got the right blueprint for advancing to the finals. You know, and speaking of the finals on the Western Conference, you know, I'm looking to this series more than any other series that was played in the playoffs thus far, man, Mike, as you have the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors, you know, that are playing later on tonight. And this is going to be a wild, wild shootout. Believe it or not, you know, I had some discussions with this series on people, and I actually feel that Houston is going to overtake Golden State, but it's a toss-up. Somebody could say that Golden State is going to take Houston, and I wouldn't get into a big disagreement over it. You know, it's like, you know, almost like apples and oranges, you know, for the most part. So, you know, it's going to be a great series. I'm looking forward to it.
You want to know my honest to God opinion? I don't think this is going to be Golden State running them out of the building. I think Golden State played the entire regular season bored. I think that they're pretty annoyed with all the talk from everybody else around the league. Even the people saying this is going 7 games and they might not even win it. I think that you're going to see a team come out like last year's finals where they said all this talk about LeBron James, we're the best team in the world right now, and we're going to show you. I think you're going to see that team from last year's finals show up right now.
Well, I will give this much credit to Golden State, as I do think that Golden State is a better defensive team than Houston, and that might be the difference makers, that they do play overall better team defense than the Houston Rockets. But the Houston Rockets have been playing out of this world. The addition of Chris Paul has been really helpful to those guys. You know, so, and they're shooting well, and it's just a matter of if those guys shoot well or not, you know, because they're a jump shooting team. You know, their game is based off of the jump shot and three-pointers. You know, so if those guys hit shots, they're going to be tough to make, and if they don't hit their shots, you know, it could possibly be a long series for them, and they could very well get ran out of the gym. But I think if there's one team that can take down the Big Bad Wolves, which is the Golden State Warriors, it is the Houston Rockets. So, let's see what happens. You know, you have Harden, you got Chris Paul, you know, Trevor Ariza's been playing well, you know, Eric Gordon's been playing well. So, you know, they're playing on all cylinders. Golden State is playing on all cylinders. And like you said, you know, now I think in their mind, they're not saying that they took anybody lightly, but they know that they have a challenge in front of them. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about this series. And, you know, game two for Cleveland and Boston is on the day of the NBA lottery, Mad Mike. And with that being said, you know, real quick, the Knicks are holding a ninth pick in the draft as of now. And listeners, they do have the opportunity to move up a few spots, and they have the opportunity to fall back to the 10th spot, right? There's 10 teams that's in the lottery, right, Mad Mike?
No, I thought that the Knicks have no shot at moving up. I thought that with the top eight teams? Remember with that win, they had to get into the 8th spot so they could move anywhere between 8 and 6 or 8 and 5. But because they came in behind the Nets, and you know those meaningless wins at the, and they won 2 of the last 3 games of the season and cost themselves. I think where they are now is in the 9 to 11 range.
Because I was watching, I was listening to the news, and they were saying that Scott Perry was going to be there. And if the Knicks hold the 9th pick, why would he even be there in the first place?
Be there as in every team is represented by somebody, regardless of where. Of where they're picking, right? They have all those guys on the at the podium.
So he's just sitting there in a ninth spot, irregardless, looking like the, you know, I mean.
No. I believe the Knicks can fall back between 9 and 11. I'll do my homework for you. But I'm almost positive that they can't move into that. They can't move up from 9. The last I checked, but I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I didn't fully do my homework. I did hear him on the Alan Hahn show talking about it. I was pretty impressed with him throughout the entire week. This week, I've been impressed with Scott Perry.
Yeah, you know, I we said in the last show, and, you know, I was mentioning, and you know, that their front office, they've made some good moves. Well, as bad as they've been over the last several years, Mad Mike, you know, we got to give credit where credit is due also. And I got to give credit to Scott Perry. You know, he's made some good moves for the Knicks since he's been here. And, you know, he does have this team moving in the right direction. It may not be as fast as we would want it to be as Knicks fans because, you know, New Yorkers are always in a we want to win right away mentality. You know, but he is heading in the right direction and he seems to be moving his team in the right direction. And the more that he does, the more I'm starting to have confidence in him and his decision-making as far as, you know, Knicks brass goes, Matt Mike. But it's the other guys. It's the Steve Mills, the Allen Houstons, the, you know, the Dolans. Those are the guys that make me nervous because I still think even if there's a move that he wants to make, he still has to run it past 4 or 5 people before he gets the thumbs up to do it.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I just from what I heard from him, He was just saying that what the Knicks want, and he's not afraid to say, you know, most guys, you know, most of these GMs, they don't want you to know what they're thinking come draft time. But the Knicks aren't looking to trade their pick. They're not looking to fool people into anything. He said they want a wing player. And my assumption is that means that's either got to be Michael Porter if he's fallen on draft night, or Mikal Bridges. That I think he knows what they want. He's looking for the Carmelo Anthony replacement. He acknowledges that's what's missing on this team. And Bridges brings that defense they're looking for. He's that dog. He comes from a Jay Wright system. Like you were just claiming, calling out for Jalen Brunson, who I think the Knicks are going to target in the second round. We'll see, but that's he was honest about it. He's not looking point guard. Oh, he like I said, they got a coach, and he said it on the Alan Hahn show. They got a coach that really believes that he has two-way point guards. He thinks that Moutier and Frank Ntilikina are going to be, you know, elite defenders, on the ball defenders at the point guard position, and play it offensively. Above average. And he compared Moutier to what's the guy's name out in Memphis? Michael.
Who did?
Point guard in Memphis. I just lost my whole.
Conley.
Mike Conley Jr., boom. And that's big shoes to fill. I don't think Moutier can shoot it like Mike Conley can shoot it, but he believes that he can get the same thing out of him. So we'll see.
And after doing a little bit of homework, I looked it up, man, Mike. I think the Knicks, they can move up. So they are in the lottery. They probably won't move up, you know, because their chances, you know, obviously the lottery, the less wins you have, the more ping pong balls you get or whatever the heck they're called. The more lottery balls you get, so the Knicks won't have as many lottery balls because of their record, but they do have an opportunity to move up. It's just very slim that they will, but they can move up in this draft, Mad Mike.
Adam Silver, I hope you listen to this podcast. Unlike the Nets, unlike the Chicago Bulls, unlike the Memphis Grizzlies, the New York Knicks never once put out a roster because they were tanking, because they were resting players. They never pulled any punches. They just had a really bad roster. Throw them an extra couple ping pong to knock some of these other teams that you know were clearly tanking, you know, behind us. How about you do us a favor for once?
Not only that, what I was looking up, Mad Mike, there was rumors that people felt that the lottery might have been rigged when the Knicks were able to get Patrick Ewing with the number one overall pick in that draft.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that. But at the same time, none of us think that the lottery was rigged for Cleveland to get LeBron James. And then for Cleveland to get Kyrie, you know, Irving the same year LeBron James left. We don't think that, right?
Well, let's also keep in mind, Matt Mike, that in 2014, like you said, when the Cavs were awarded the number one overall pick, them dudes had just 1.7% chance of getting that. And somehow they managed to get the number one pick.
No, don't tell me. Don't come to me with the Knicks and Pat Ewing some 30 years ago. You know, let's look at what's gone down, you know, in recent times. Come on, man. Let's stop that.
So we're hoping.
Anthony Bennett.
The Knicks have definitely had their fair share of up and downs when it comes to the lottery. They've had some shocking moments, so hopefully we can have another. Listen, I'll be happy moving up to the fifth spot. I don't even, I'm not going to get greedy, Mad Mike. I'm not going to get greedy. You don't have to give me number one. I'll take five. I'll take four. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we ain't going that high.
But they are some good players. There are some good players coming out of the draft this year, though, Mad Mike.
I'm interested to see how these draft boards start to fill out because I'm be honest, this is the one year where I think that the Knicks are actually in perfect position picking in the 8, 9, 10 range because the guys that are – I just don't think you need the guys that are up there at the top, you know. And I could be wrong, you know. I'm not saying these are bad players. I'm talking about need. And I just think from a need standpoint, you don't want the Knicks drafting somebody they don't need, somebody that might not fit in. You just finished telling me that this coach wants stretch big men, and none of the guys at the top of the draft are stretch big men. And if they're stretch big men coming out of college, they're not ready to play inside basketball
yet. There's one kid from Missouri. He's
Michael Porter Jr. Yeah, he's a small forward, though. He's a wing player.
He's 6'10", though.
Yeah, but he's not. We're not talking about a guy that's going to go in there and bang. And we're talking about today's type of small forward.
Yeah, but basketball has changed so much. I was also talking to someone about that. You know, solid big men with their back to the basket. You know, a la Enes Kanter. You know, Greg Monroe. Those guys are a dying breed at this point. And now everybody, all big men are shooting threes. Kristaps Porzingis. You know.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You already have one of them. You don't need.
Yeah,
two
but if you
of them.
You
know
can
what I mean?
if he can play the three, and supposedly he's good enough to play the three, and he can cover the three, and he can play the four, and not for nothing, if you could put him and Kristaps on the court at the same time with Enes Kanter at the five, I really wouldn't be mad at that. Now I doubt if he's going to slide down far enough to the Knicks, and we're probably looking at the Knicks maybe drafting one of the Bridges.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. You don't want them to go if they can go up to five or six and snag Porter, fine. If that's the guy, but I'm saying I know. I maybe I don't know these Knicks, but You know, just you don't want them to. What I'm saying is, you don't want them to get up there and take Jackson or Ayton, who, yeah, these guys are special talents. They're just redundant talents at this point in time. You know what I mean? They're just not. They're not who you need at this point.
I just don't want Trae Young.
I don't want Sexton either. I don't want any of these guards. That's what I'm saying. The Knicks don't need guards right now. You have a coach that actually believes that they have talent at the guard position. Don't give him any more talent. Start giving him the big men. Start giving him the wing players. They don't have that. We both agree on that. I mean, we're to the point where Fizdale is saying that Lance Thomas, oh my God, did you see that? Lance Thomas is going to be his Draymond Green. When he said it, I was thinking about you the whole time, brother.
You know how I feel about Ron Baker. But, you know, he got to give a vote of confidence to who he has on the roster. So
yeah, Ron, I'm telling you right now, Ron is not going to be.
But I had you should have seen the dumbfounded look I had on my face when he was making those comments. You know, so we'll see. But let's bring up this Dwayne Casey firing Mad Mike. You know, he benched Shaquille O'Neal and Barkley got into a big disagreement over it as DeRozan was benched by Casey for his play on the court. And,
he deserved it.
Right, exactly, which is what Shaquille O'Neal said. But in the end, it's sad it's a players' league, and I believe that Dwayne Casey was ran out of town. Although Toronto hasn't performed well and have been ousted in the playoffs, you know, the last several years, I do believe that the biggest reason why he was fired was because of the way he handled that DeRozan situation. And it shows even more, like, you know, like we've mentioned before, that this is a players' league. No matter how good of a coach you are, this is a players' league, and I expect him to get a coaching job real quick someplace else, Mad Mike.
Yeah, you know, I was having this conversation with Brother Sada Chris at the gym this week, and I was telling him, I'm like, Casey's going to get fired, man. It's not even a question in my mind, and I'm going to tell you exactly why. It's the same reason I told you that Joe Girardi was going to get fired. Once he benched DeRozan, you could see DeRozan checked out mentally. You could hear in his comments. And then in the decisive game, he gets thrown out of the game. He gets ejected. He wanted no part of it. Dwayne Casey, coach of the year. He coached these guys to the number one record in the East, first time ever. And he lost his star player. Now, let's be fair, Lloyd. I think we could. You just actually agree with me, right? DeRozan deserved to be benched.
Yeah, 1,000%. 1,000%.
He melted down in that fourth quarter in the first game. And once they lost that first game, I knew it was over for them. Because all right then and there, all the ghosts, all the demons that this entire season was about putting behind them came right back. They couldn't. They blew that, what was it, 17-point lead they blew to the Cavs in game one. It went downhill for them totally. I don't think you can fire Dwayne Casey because his players are mentally weak. And just to touch my last point on that, Kyle Lowry constantly takes criticism for his poor playoff performances. You could see how brokenhearted, how broken he was, man. In that final game, because he finally gave them the playoffs that they needed from him, and DeRozan had checked out on them.
You're right. And he's a great coach, and, you know, I'm just baffled by that. But, you know, maybe Toronto felt, obviously not maybe, they felt that they needed to go in a different direction. The reasoning for them firing him, to me, wasn't sufficient enough, which even leads to more, you know, to have me believe even more that the reason why he was fired was because of the DeRozan situation. And I just think that the roster that they have, they're not going to get it done with what they have, man, Mike. I think that's a situation where they may need to just blow that team up, you know, and move some pieces and add some pieces. But the team that they have right now is not going to get it done.
Yeah, here's the thing. Who do you get rid of? DeRozan's making $30 million a year, and Kyle Lowry's making $30 million a year. It's really tough to blow it up. And I think that's one of the other reasons why they traded Casey, because like you said, it's a players league. Easier to get a coach in here, Budenholzer, maybe Mark Jackson, depending on what they think the players need, whether it's X and O's or just pure motivation and believing in themselves. X and O's gets you Budenholzer and you know, who else but Mark Jackson to really make you believe in yourself, based on the stories that we've heard coming out of Golden State's locker room. Anyway, depends on what they need, but
Mark Jackson might be great. He might be great for that team, man, Mike. You have some veterans there. You have some young guys there. You know, he might be just what Toronto needs.
I'm just saying, at the end of the day,
I do agree. You know, we had this talk last week where, you know, you felt that, you know, where you said that Mark Jackson was blackballed. And to a certain extent, I do believe that he's blackballed. And at some point, I do hope that he gets another opportunity. We both hoped it was with the Knicks. It's not with the Knicks. I'm not completely dissatisfied with the Knicks, with who the Knicks have. You know, I watched the press conference, just, you know, obviously saying the right things and then going out and doing the right things are two different things. But, you know, Fizdale thus far seemed to have done everything the right way, you know, with as far as taking over the, you know, the head coaching job of the New York Knicks. So we'll see if he can put it all together and turn things around in New York. I'm not expecting this team to make the playoffs. I'm not expecting this team to win a championship because of the roster that they have. I just want a coach to come in there to get these guys to perform well and to play better basketball. And I think, if you have a coach in place that players want to play for and that players respect, you get the maximum effort out of players.
Yeah, I think you heard it from Kylo Quinn already saying that he already knows that where Hornacek fell short. David Fizdale is not going to fall short. Like you said, the one thing I do like is he did say all the right things. I don't want cupcakes. I need mentally and physically tough players. He said a lot of the things that I thought Mark Jackson was going to say, and I give him credit for it. I don't know what, like you said, we don't know what the results are going to be, but I will tell you this. I don't think that the results in year one matter. Not for me, at least. It's about building the foundation. We'll see if he has the right foundation, but he seems to have guys like Kylo Quinn reconsidering opting out of their options. I mean, I think Cantor's going to leave. And honest to God,
if
man,
he does,
I'm telling
that
you
might
right
be,
now.
I mean, I like Cantor a lot, and I thought Cantor was the best player on the Knicks. He would get my vote for the MVP of the Knicks last season. But if he does leave, which I hope he doesn't, that frees up money where the Knicks go, where they can target, you know what I'm saying, a free agent, Mad Mike.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And I don't even think that they're going to target a guy. I think that maybe at that point, then maybe they change course in the draft. And then where I'm saying things like, I hope they save themselves. I hope they save themselves from themselves by not drafting a big man and sticking to the wing guy. I'm not totally opposed at that point. If you want to say I want to save the money towards, you know, 2019 free agency.
Right. Great point. Or you can sit on
draft
that
big man.
And that frees up two, you know what I'm saying, the ability to bring in two big contracts.
Yeah, and
so you
look,
have
once
that
again,
option
it,
as well.
You don't have to spend the money now because obviously you don't know, even if Chris Stapps makes it back, you don't know how healthy the knee is. You don't know how much you trust the knee or not. You don't necessarily think that you're going to contend this season. So once again, if he wants to opt out and leave, and I heard Steve Mills kind of say it, Scott Perry also said it, we want him here, but, you know, the ball's in his court.
And
you
mind
know,
you,
they,
you also
not
get another, a possibility of another high draft pick next year also, man. Let's face it, the Knicks, again, they're going to be, you know, the 10th, you know, around there at the end of next season. So, you know, they're still being played to have another potential high draft pick. And that's just where this team is going to be. I just want to see progress. That's it. That's all I want to see is progress, man, Mike. And if I see progress, then, I'll be happy.
Yeah,
my expectations
to be
are not high at all.
Point guard. I was saying the progress has to be in a point guard position more than anything because of the amount of lottery talent they have at that position. And another thing, he spoke very, very highly of Frank Ntilikina's shot. He says there's nothing wrong there. There's nothing broken. He thinks and when I tell you, I listened to every single interview this guy had this week. He said it. I think Frank is too unselfish to the point where he takes himself out of the rhythm of the offense. And that's one thing he is going to fix.
But remember, man, Mike, I had brought that up last week when I said that he was passing up shots. And who knows if that was a result of Jeff Hornacek telling him not to shoot and to make another play or to pass first. You know, I was saying that. So hopefully, again, You know, Fizdale was, he played guard. Supposedly he has a great relationship, or he works well with guards, and he's turned their careers around. You know, I mentioned how he helped out Gasol and Chris Bosh, and this could be exactly what the Knicks need. Let's see. The verdict is still out, but we'll see. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk some baseball. We haven't talked baseball, and we're also going to discuss the Giants and Jets who had their rookie mini camps last week. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, my name is A.O., Aaron Omar Baker, and I'm the producer for the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Show. Listen, for starters, I want to say thank you for tuning in, thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing the show. If you aren't already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn. Just head over to LloydAThompson.com. All the information is there, and if you want to send a question to the guys, they'll answer it on a future show. You can do so at the website or directly by email. It's Lloyd@PardonMyFresh.com. All right, that's it. Real quick, real simple. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Before the break, I had mentioned that we were going to discuss baseball because we haven't been able to do so, you know, because of the NFL, you know, draft going on and, you know, the hiring of the Knicks coach. So we're going to talk about some baseball, Mad Mike. And, you know, the New York Mets, we'll start off with the New York Mets. The New York Mets have gone downhill. This is a team that started off really good, and they fizzled out, and now they're playing close to 500 baseball. They released Matt Harvey after reports he was, you know, he went out clubbing the night before. You know, so they traded him to the Reds for Masakwo. I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he's a catcher. And Matt Harvey went out, Matt Mike, it did nothing but pitched a good game, you know, in his first outing as a Cincinnati Reds. But this team is going downhill. It's funny, you know, when I ride the train, I have a friend that's a conductor, and he predicted that by the middle of May, the Mets would be at 500. And this is when the Mets were off to a blazing start. And every time I see him, I say, you know what, man, you are absolutely right. The Mets are heading in the direction that you said they were going to head in. He's a big Mets fan. So, you know, DeGrom is hurt. Syndergaard hasn't been pitching well. You know, Gesellman, you know, I want to get your opinion on this, Matt Mike, and I'm curious to see what you say. I almost feel like in the beginning, Manny Acta really didn't have that much to do because the Mets were playing well. And now that he has to coach, I get a slight impression that he's like a deer caught in headlights a little bit, Matt Mike. And he may be a little bit out of his, you know, he may be showing his deficiencies as a coach with the New York Mets right now.
I mean, for starters, he's a rookie coach. I mean, it's the same thing that I was saying with Aaron Boone. You got to let guys, he's well respected around the league. You got to let guys take their bumps and bruises. I mean, batting out of order is unacceptable no matter who you are, no matter what year. I mean, they don't bat out of order in Little League, man. So I'll say to that, that's a mistake. It's a major mistake, one that he might never live down. But outside of that, what can he do? I'm one of the guys that praised the depth that I thought Sandy finally got this team. The problem is that, like you said, was it guys that they got because they waited out the market and got bargains? Were these guys that they were actually going to target? When you look at Todd Frazier, yeah, Todd Frazier's been good, you know, for the locker room. But Todd Frazier still can't hit worth a lick. Yeah, he hits for power, and therefore he drives in, you know, tends to drive in a lot of runs. But he barely gets on base, you know, even though he's taken a lot more walks this year. But he still has a low average. So you wonder about a guy like Mike Moustakas, for example. You know, was the $8 million that he got, you know, was saving the $7 million for Frazier worth not paying the $10 million for Moustakas? You look at Anthony Swarzak. They were better arms, and it's unfair to pick on him because he got hurt in the second week of the season, and he's transferred to, like, the 60-day or 90-day DL, which essentially means we won't see him again until July or August. Their bullpen has come back to earth. Remember, we said it. We were both cautiously optimistic about this team, but we both said, you know, pump the brakes. 12-1. This is not the team that you think they are. Their bullpen is pitching out of their mind. Their starters were pitching pretty bad to start the year. the starters never righted the ship, and the bullpen went back to what they were. And hence you have Harvey, he's gone. DeGrom got hurt swinging a bat, but, you know, this team prides themselves on their pitchers being able to hit. I don't understand the stupidity of it. How many times do we have to see pitchers getting hurt swinging a bat or running the bases before teams realize that, hey, my ace should just sit up there and take three straight pitches down the middle and go back to the dugout until Major League Baseball realizes that, hey, the NL should have a DH too. I don't even know, man. Like, I just got so much on the mind when it comes to this team. I think that Sandy Alderson has done a terrible job. I mean, so unfair to them. There's nobody in the minor leagues, Lloyd, that they can call up. Now, it's not like the New York Yankees. They can't call anybody up.
Hey, man, Mike, I want to get your point on this because, obviously, we know that the Mets have the money to spend. And you brought up Moustakas as far as a third base option. And I was saying again to somebody that the Mets always seem to settle for second-tier free agents. Now, again, the Mets have the money. So why not bring in Moustakas? You give up a draft pick. All right, so what? You're giving up a draft pick. Why not use that money that you have, because you have the resources, to sign Moustakas? And I'm going to throw one name out there, Matt Mike. J.D. Martinez was available. Why didn't the Mets go after J.D. Martinez and leave Jay Bruce alone? And if you get J.D. Martinez, who's having a good year with the Red Sox thus far, I think the outfield with Martinez, Cespedes, and whoever you have in center field, whether it's Lagares, Nemo, Conforto, that's a lot better than Bruce, Cespedes, and one of those guys. And also, you know, Martinez is a good outfielder. And, you know, again, like you said, Todd Frazier, he strikes out a lot. You know, he does hit for power, but that's about it.
For the record, J.D. Martinez is an awful outfielder. Where he benefits right now, I mean, he's mainly a DH in Boston. He's just given, he goes out into left field. Boston has one of the smallest left fields in baseball. And it's just like, where they just want to get Benintendi a day off or Mookie Betts a day off or Bradley, and they just rotate those guys between right field and center field and stick J.D. Martinez there. He's a bad – I know what you're saying. You're just saying, hey, you know, this is the A-list free agent. Why are they looking at a Jay Bruce instead of him? And I'll tell you, because he makes 25 and Jay Bruce signed for $13 million a year.
But they have the money. But that's what I'm saying, man, Mike. The Mets have the money. I don't know why the Mets are penny pinching. They have the money to do so.
They should have the money.
If they didn't sign these guys, man, Mike, because they have minor leaguers or guys in the minors like the Yankees do that are coming up, I can see them not signing those types of players. But like you just said, they have nobody. They don't have anybody in the minors.
No, I'll give this to you. It's not just they don't have anybody in the minors. I don't think Sandy Alderson prides himself on developing minor league players. And I think we've given them enough time, but here's how we could – let's transition over to the Yankees, right? Amed Rosario, shortstop, New York Mets, right? Last year was the number one or two overall prospect in all of baseball. He's been routinely ranked ahead of Gleyber Torres, right, in the minor leagues. For some reason, he's just ranks ahead of him. For whatever, athleticism, whatever it is. When you watch Amed Rosario play and you watch Gleyber Torres play, you can see Gleyber Torres is already a full-fledged baseball player, understands every situation, understands when to give all-out hustle. He's amazing in the field, unbelievable in the field. I didn't even realize he was that smooth. At the plate, he knows when to dig in and swing for power. He knows when to shorten up, go opposite field. He's looked in his early time here like a complete baseball player. And it's no coincidence that the Yankees have completely changed their season around ever since his call-up. Amed Rosario just looks like an athlete. He doesn't look like he knows how to play this game 100% just yet. You know what I mean? And that's the difference between the Mets player development and the Yankees player development. And the Mets have got to start prioritizing it if they want to compete in the NL East. With the Nats might lose Harper, but the Nats are still developing players at a high rate. Atlanta, you're seeing what Atlanta's doing with Ronald Acuna and Ozzy Albies in their lineup.
Wow, those kids are exciting, man.
And look at what Philadelphia has been about this year. And Philadelphia is a year ahead of schedule. So that's something to think about. So let's just saying, the Mets got a star. They got things to change up right now.
And not only that, whatever. Man, Mike, you know, we always talk about it's important to win series. You know, we'll get into that, which has been a Yankees turnaround. But before we move on to the Yankees, the Mets lost 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. That's unacceptable. You can't lose 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. You know, they lost the series.
Who's pitching in those games?
They lost the series to the Colorado Rockies. You know, you can't do that. You can't. But the one thing I will say is that they are sitting. They're still within striking distance, and that's because of the fast start that they had. But they're still in striking distance. But you're absolutely right. The young talent that Atlanta has, the young talent that Philly has, I got the opportunity to see them play, you know, over the weekend against the Mets. And, you know, they're on an up and up.
For the record, Colorado's got a better roster, and Colorado's got guys like Brendan Rodgers, who still hasn't even broken the big league team. I don't think the Mets are, you know, can mess with Colorado.
Yeah, that's a push.
If you ask me, man, the Mets need to start considering trading some pieces and revamping.
Yeah, but they just sound like Jay. So it would be players like Jay Bruce, Todd Frazier. Now,
I'm talking about trading guys that really make a difference in your farm system. I'm talking about considering moving a 29-year-old like Jacob DeGrom. I'm talking about, am I going to re-sign DeGrom or am I going to re-sign Syndergaard? Because if I can't sign both, I'm going to try to get something now.
What even about this, man, Mike? What about Cespedes? What about
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I'm going to be honest with you, and I think Joe Rivera has mentioned it too. Cespedes, no one in the league wants him. You got to remember something. Cespedes was traded 3 times before he signed with the Mets. Yeah, no one talks about that, right? Cespedes opened his career with Oakland. He was then traded to Boston. He was then traded from Boston to Detroit. He was then traded from Detroit to the Mets. Ask yourself why the Mets invested $125 million on a guy who's playing for his fourth team.
Not only that, they almost didn't re-sign him.
No. They only re-signed him because they thought that he was going to go to Washington. That's the only reason they signed him long-term. Because they couldn't lose him like they lost Murphy to the Nationals. They couldn't live that down. So they went and they overpaid the guy. You know, it's funny that you mentioned him because yesterday I was listening I forget the person's name. I was listening to someone within MLB, and he was saying that the belief is that Cespedes is just he lifts way too many weights. He's just too wired up. He's too wound up and tight. And he's always going to suffer from massive muscle pulls. They're like he has the biggest quads in all of baseball for no reason. For no reason.
Yeah, you definitely don't need to be that big as a baseball player.
No, man, I saw this guy putting on his jewelry the other day in the middle of an interview, and I'm like, this guy's biceps look like Mr. Olympia. I wasn't sure if I was looking at Hulk Hogan or a baseball player.
Well, you know he ain't sticking himself with the needle because I'm sure they're on top of that in baseball now. You know, there's McGuire's and a Jose Canseco's and a Barry Bonds and all these guys doubled the size that they were when they first started in the league. But Cespedes is, you know, he's a big dude.
Yeah, I'm not putting out there that he was cheating in any by any means.
I don't think
he was
because, like I said, MLB is on top of that stuff now. So I don't think he is, but I'm just saying, like, you know, for a player that's literally, that just goes to show you how dedicated he is to his weightlifting program because, you know, he's big and it's not from, you know, illegal substance use. He's just big and he's big from lifting. And like you said, there's no need to be that big as a baseball player. You know, because the skinniest guy can still hit home runs.
Yeah, it makes no sense, man.
We'll see. At some point, we'll have Joe come on the show, hopefully really soon, you know, because we haven't really touched up on baseball, you know, so hopefully we can have him on the show within the next week or so we can hear his take on the Mets and Yankees. And speaking of the Yankees, let's move on to the Yankees, Mad Mike. As the Yankees have been playing out of this world over the last several weeks, you know, they took 3 out of 4 from Houston. They took 2 out of 3 from Boston. You know, they've been playing unbelievable baseball. They took 2 out of 3 from the Oakland Athletics. You know, after losing the first game, like you said, they brought up Gleyber Torres. He's been playing well. You know, the one thing I will say, though, Mad Mike, and I want to get your take on this, is Sonny Gray. The Yankees do have their problems.
No, they don't. I can't. You want to do the Sonny Gray right now? Because, man, the Yankees messed up Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray is not bad.
That's a problem. Yeah, go ahead. That's a problem, and they need to fix it. I'm not saying he's a terrible pitcher, but
he's easy to fix. That's what I'm telling you.
But that's
Sonny Gray is easy to fix.
And he might be easy to fix, and the Yankees need to get on that right away because his last couple of outings has been dreadful. He did pitch well against Houston, though. He pitched well against Houston.
Two of his last three starts were really good, actually.
Well, he got lit up by Oakland.
Yeah, he got lit up by Oakland. But here's the thing, and this is why I said don't look too much into it, because I listened to a Bob Melvin interview yesterday, and he shed some light on Sonny Gray, and they asked him exactly what was Sonny Gray's issue. He said that the issue is that the Yankees changed them. He said that when Sonny Gray was in Oakland, Sonny Gray was pitched off his fastball, his four-seamer and his two-seamer, but he threw the slider and the changeup a lot more. When he got to the Yankees, and this is, you can look this up, Fangraphs did an article on it, where else did it? Sort of in Pinstripe Valley. The Yankees have turned him from a complete pitcher. They don't have him pitch off his fastball anymore. He's throwing his four-seamer and two-seamer. He's throwing his two-seamer mainly at the lowest percentage he's ever thrown it for his entire career. And he's throwing his curveball at a higher percentage than he's ever thrown it, and basically scrapping his sinker, slider, and changeup. And I can tell you why. I know why the Yankees did it. The Yankees did it because of the launch angle and swings right now. They don't, because people are lifting the ball in the air. It's more dangerous for him to live below, you know, at the bottom of the strike zone now. Therefore, his sinker slider is kind of falling into the path of the bats. So the Yankees obviously want him to change that. But I think that the Yankees panicked before they even saw what this pitcher was made of, because they started to make the change last year. And it's kind of come into this year, it doesn't work for him. And to an extent, it's the same thing that's kind of bit Masahiro Tanaka in the butt. There's a reason why his home runs have absolutely shot up over the last 2 years. So, you know, as far as Melvin said, that's one of the reasons that the A's were able to jump on him, because they know what works for him, and they know what the Yankees were, you know, are asking him to do. So they knew exactly what to look for. So I wouldn't read too much into his last start. But the Yankees do have to figure this out. They have to figure out, one, if this guy became an ace, the ace you traded for and you thought you traded for, he got to that pinnacle of his career. Pitch in a certain way. You got to let him pitch that way. You don't trade for a guy and say, go change. And if you are, and this is what Bob Melvin said, if you are going to change him, you need to go through the bumps and bruises the same way you went through the bumps and bruises with CC Sabathia. You know what I mean? CC Sabathia was pretty bad for 2 year stretch until he figured it out last year. If you want him to change, you got to deal with this.
But here's the thing, though, man, Mike, if you brought up the point that, you know, they had him throwing differently because players are swinging with more lift on the ball. That falls under analytical, you know, coaching, right?
That's not. I'm not gonna put this on Boone.
This is just a question I'm gonna ask you.
That's an analytical front office.
But wouldn't it be analytically also if you talk about the pitches he has more success rate with, as compared to pitches that he doesn't have success rate with? That would fall under analytics as well, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that Melvin touched on it. I think that when you pitch in Yankee Stadium, there's a bigger fear of giving up cheap home runs, a la JD Martinez versus Dellin Betances. And that's why you don't want the ball in the air as much. It's one of the reasons Phil Hughes is not a Yankee anymore. He's a fly ball pitcher. When you're in Oakland, Oakland is a bigger ballpark. You go and you get speedy. You know, if you remember, that's how Oakland built the outfield. They went and got three center fielders, and they just put them, you know, whatever goes up in the air, we're going to catch it. We have three center fielders who can range and catch everything. And a fly ball pitcher like Sonny Gray can survive. The Yankees traded for a guy that they didn't think could survive in their park, and that's not Sonny Gray's fault. That's the Yankees' fault.
Right, but I mean, like you said, just let him go out. Let him do what's made him successful. Let him do what, you know, what's made him the player that you actually traded for and thought you were going to get. And obviously, you know, if you're getting that type of pitcher and you put him in that ballpark, you have to live by the sport. You know what I'm saying? You have to live and die by what you go with, right? You would think so.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%.
And, you know, you brought up a great point. And that's something that I didn't think about, and that's something that I didn't do my homework on. You know, so you might as well let these guys just get on and, you know, be who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and live with whatever the result is. Because not every game he pitches is going to be in Yankee Stadium. You know what I'm saying? He's also going to pitch on the road.
Exactly.
And you have him pitching on the road as if he's pitching in Yankee Stadium. And maybe that's why Sonny Gray has came out and said, you know, he spoke out against catching, you know, having Gary Sanchez catch him. You know, and I thought it was unfair to the young man because Gary Sanchez didn't catch him. Austin Romine caught him, and he got lit up. And I was watching Sports New York, and they was like, well, how about Sanchez? Not Sanchez. And, I mean, like, you know, that's unfair to the young man.
Yeah, but I mean, from that standpoint, I don't think you can ignore it. I mean, before going into Friday, start against the A's, he had a 2.44 ERA and 10 starts with Romine, and he has a 6.4 ERA and 11 starts with Sanchez. I mean, at that point, it kind of sucks that Aaron Boone even has to take these questions. You just can't. You're a catcher, bro. You're a catcher. When you and another pitcher just can't find common ground for some reason, those things happen. You can't take it offensive. You just got to say, you know what? I can't argue with the numbers. Me and him, for some reason, we don't click. I know that today's going to be my day off, or today's my pinch hit day or my DH day. You just know it. You have that feeling already. Well, that's the feeling. Him and Sanchez, they just don't work. Sonny Gray has to live below the strike zone. He's got to be able to bounce balls. And if that doesn't make him comfortable with Sanchez behind there, then he's going to end up living up in the zone. He's going to try to be a little more pinpoint instead of being able to just let it rock, and he's going to make more mistakes. And good for Aaron Boone and the Yankees for at least admitting, right now we got to fix him, and right now that's Austin Romine.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, usually pitch, and that's been, you know, for years, going back so many years, it was always pitchers that, and it would be a backup catcher, and even with the Yankees, that no matter whenever that pitcher pitched, the backup catcher caught.
John Flaherty caught Randy Johnson for an entire season.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then
Jose Molina caught A.J. Burnett for an entire season when we won the 2009 World Series. They were benching Jorge Posada in the World Series. They don't hear anybody talking about it because the spoiled Yankee fans won a World Series. So the spoiled Yankee fans ignore that. Yo, this happens in baseball. That's all there is to it. Taking emails from all these fans that wanted Aaron Boone fired after a 9-9 start, as if the end of the world.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was too soon. That was counting your chickens before they hatch. And
all these fans booing Stanton. Go ahead and feel that one too. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. But yeah, go ahead. Shoot. You tell everybody right now how early it was and why it was a mistake.
Yeah, it was the Yankees. Obviously, you know, he's a new coach. He has to get acclimated to his team and his surroundings. And he is a good baseball. Some baseball players are just smart. They're smart ball players. And one thing Aaron Boone has been his entire career, playing career, smart. Even when he was in the booth at ESPN, you know, doing Sunday Night Baseball, he's smart. I also, you know, listening to Alex Rodriguez, I also think Alex Rodriguez will be a great baseball coach because he's smart. And he knows the game of baseball. You know, so it's going to be interesting. He has his team playing well. The Yankees seem to be having fun. They have a young team. I also want to bring up Clint Frazier, who's actually playing really well, Mad Mike. And Drury, you know, what do they do with those guys? Do they, you know, do they bring up Frazier? Do they use him as a trading chip? I'm hearing, you know, teams are after him and Andujar. Do they trade Andujar? Do they trade Frazier? Do they go after Manny Machado? You know, do they go after Bryce Harper? You know, obviously, I still think the Yankees need a stud starter. I don't know if any stud. I know Kershaw and Keuchel are free agents after this year. You know, so there's a lot of things that even though the Yankees are playing this well, they do, you know, they have some guys in the minors that are playing well. And it might be a long jam for these young men, man, Mike. But do you let go of Aaron Hicks and bring up Frazier, and Frazier replaces Aaron Hicks? Like, they have a lot of decisions to make.
Yeah, they do. But you know what? This is the one thing. And I'm not saying you're doing it because I know for a fact that you're not doing this right now. But the one thing that I try to tell fans, I try to tell people that email me or you know, just talk to me in the streets or whatever it is. Let's not make a big deal about who might come up, who might not come. Like Jury. Jury's having a very good minor league camp, minor league rehab stint. But I'll tell you one thing. I know about those neck injuries. Those neck injuries can flare up at any time. So it might just happen to him right now again. You know, he knows that he's still battling through it. So we don't know when we're going to see him again. But at the same time, maybe Miguel Andujar is struggling when it's time for Jury to come up. And that becomes a much easier decision. You know what I mean? Andujar is, by the way, I know that he's only made two errors. You know how much, what his defensive run save is right now? A -6. In 30 games played, he's a -6. He's on pace for a -30 run save season. Easily one of the worst as a third baseman in history. He's not playing good defense. I watched him yesterday butcher in the 9th inning alone. They went down to singles against Chase and Shreve's Ledger. Both plays that he should have made. He has no range at third base. He doesn't, and I'm not talking about just protecting the line. He has no range to the left or the right, and I don't know why. Because he moves pretty well, on the bases. I don't know if it's reaction time. I don't know if he doesn't see the ball well off the bat. But he's hurting them in the field. So I can see him getting traded. I can see him being used as trade bait. And who was the other guy? You have
Frazier.
You have Frazier, right? I don't think Frazier's going anywhere. I think if we're being honest and we're being objective, Aaron Hicks hasn't done much this year. Every time you see him, I've never seen a player with so much hype, and I like Aaron Hicks. I'm a big Hicks fan. I've never seen a guy just miss his pitches every single at-bat. It's like every at-bat you hear Michael Kay or Ken Singleton say, he just missed that one. How many times are you just going to miss it before you rip? You know what's the difference between a really good ball player, a great ball player, a really good player, and just a basically average underperforming guy? Just miss. Good players don't just miss every at-bat. They don't. And he just misses. And Brett Gardner's slow start, I know that Aaron Boone is stuck with him. I think that slow start is enough to scare the Yankees into saying, hey, at some point, I might need this kid. And this kid is the most impactful, ready outfield prospect I have.
Look, here's the thing. We both agree that he can play center field.
He was a center fielder for Cleveland. We made him a corner outfielder.
Right. So
he's a center fielder.
And I say that to say that both Gardner and Hicks are free agents after this year.
Correct.
So because you know you have that bullet in the holster, you know, in the gun, you know, chamber with him, that will allow you to be able to let Hicks go, be able to let Gardner go, put him in center field, you know, and then going into next year, your outfielders are Stanton, Frazier, and Judge. And maybe that might allow the Yankees go after. And
I agree with you, but I'm gonna tell you this: I think the Yankees are secretly grooming Stanton to take over left field. They're just doing it quietly, where none of us are paying attention to it.
Well, you got to get your money worth out of him, right? And it's just a matter of learning how to play because it is a different. You know, it's funny. I can play all three outfield positions, but playing right field is the most uncomfortable for me. It's not that I can't play it, but it's the most comfortable for me because the way the ball comes off the bat when you're in right field compared to where it comes off the bat when you're in left field is completely different. So I totally understand what Stanton is going through right now when he plays left field.
Yes, the tail. The tail off the bat of a right-hand hitter is away from you, and when you're in left field for a right-hand batter, the ball is pulling you.
But when you're
so
used to playing a certain position, your entire
career. Oh, I agree
with you
100%.
You know what I'm saying? You even though you know that that's the case, it's still a level of uncomfortability, and I get that. And he goes out there and he does his best, and he's learning. Look, he's an athlete, and he's a young guy. So at some point, I think he'll be a very good left fielder. You know, but we all know that left field is a big field in Yankee Stadium.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm just saying.
I'm pretty sure the Yankees, you know, they got a set. They play against the Nationals tomorrow and Wednesday. So I'm pretty sure he'll be in left field with Judge and Wright and Brett Gardner in center field.
And, yeah, I wouldn't doubt that, depending on who they are. Actually, you know what? I think that you're going to see Brett Gardner sit, and you're going to see Stanton in game one because they're facing Gio Gonzalez. He's a lefty. So I think Gardner gets the day off.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And then I think, like you said, what you'll see is the Nats did us a favor. They're going to give Scherzer an extra day off, and we're actually going to get Tyler Roark. So I think that's when you're going to see.
I thought they switched that, man, Mike. I'm almost sure that they announced the Yankee game yesterday.
I
thought they switched it and they moved him up to pitch the second game.
No. Yeah, yesterday before the Nationals game yesterday, they announced that Roark was going to start Wednesday versus the Yankees instead of Scherzer.
Oh, okay.
Not sure why, but my assumption is that beating the Yankees holds no value to them because it doesn't impact their National League standing. So why waste Scherzer on them, other than to send a message that, hey, this is what our best guy is going to do to you if we happen to meet in a World Series. I just think the Nationals don't care about this two-game stint with the Yankees one way or the other.
Yeah, well, listen, let's keep on winning series, and that's been the key to the Yankees turning things around is they're winning series. And if they continue to do that, I mean, look, Boston is playing – they're playing out of this world, too. You know, they took 2 out of 3 from Toronto. So Boston.
Yeah, but not for nothing. And this, I'm gonna give credit where credit's due. This is courtesy of Joe Rivera. Go look at the Yankees roster, the Yankees schedule. The Yankees, I think, going into depending on how the A's finished this past weekend out, like 26 of the Yankees' first 40 games were against teams above 500.
And they had that brutal stretch also.
So that's what I'm saying. So don't. Whereas Boston, on the other hand, 16 of their first 40 games were against teams above 500. So I'm just saying, think about where the Yankees would be if you gave them 10 more games in the first 40 against teams under 500.
Well, the one good thing is that at some point,
Texas and
at some point, the schedules are going to reverse, right? And Boston's going to have to play against those teams, and the Yankees are going to have the opportunity to play against teams that Boston got a crack at in the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a fun race. It's going to be a fun race. There's no two ways about that. And with that being said, listeners, me and Mad Mike apologize. We promise next week we're going to fill some questions from you guys. We didn't have time to do it today. So next week we're going to definitely take some questions for you guys. Happy Mother's Day again to all the mothers out there. Me and Mad Mike want to thank you guys for sticking with us, listening to us, and supporting us. Because without you guys, like I always say, there's no us. We want to thank our producer, A.O. Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going. So, guys, me and Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, in the meantime, have a safe and blessed week. So, A.O., let's roll, baby!
And that's a wrap for today's show. Shouts to everybody for checking it out. Make sure you subscribe. Brand new episodes drop every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And as always, check out LloydAThompson.com.
Peace.